What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Pickleball Connection podcast. I'm Barrett.
And I'm Danae.
And we're super stoked to have you with us today. We are about to jump into some pickleball topics in our Cruise the News segment that we do, where we kind of scan the internet looking for different forum topics. What's the pickleball community kind of talking about? We got some interesting topics for you today, as well as some rec scenario, kind of controversial scenarios. So we're going to jump right into it. Before we do, do you have anything to say, Danae, or do you want to go right in?
I mean, I think all of them today are all rec plays, so it's kind of a fun little episode. So I think a lot of you guys will enjoy this one. I think we should just roll right into it.
All right, let's go.
For over 10 years, innovation has been at the core of who we are at Selkirk. We take risks, we test, we evolve. Introducing the Selkirk Lab 007. With an Infinigrid surface that lasts at least three times longer than rock carbon, and a titanium mesh layer for added power, while maintaining the largest sweet spot available. Because good is never good enough.
So the first scenario I want to talk about, I saw this post on the Kitchen Forum, and there was a ton of comments on it. And I know this is a really relatable topic. So this person says, when playing against a strong net opponent, so somebody, a team that's really good at playing at the net, this person says, how can you devise a strategy to break their rhythm? And there was a ton of comments. So I just want to like first throw it at you and just say, you know, what do you personally do when you're playing a team that you're like, dang, they're really good at playing at the net?
Yeah. So I think we may have talked about this a little bit before. So some of you might know what I'm about to say, but I find when I'm playing a team that's really good at the net, I actually start to dink to the middle of the court because I think a lot of times when you're playing a team that's really good, you know, a lot of players, especially around like the 4-0 level, just love to dink cross court. It's honestly fun to dink cross court. You can hit these angles, you can create these pop-ups. But the problem is that when a team's really good, when you're playing against a really good team, the further you dink the ball out wide, the more options you give them. So they can speed the ball up down the line. They can speed the ball up to the middle. They can dink the ball back hard at you cross court. There's just a lot of options that they have. So especially when I'm playing a team that is better than me, legitimately, I feel like they're better than me at the kitchen. If I'm playing the left, I start kind of dinking low shots, but still try to be aggressive, still try to get it in that pressurized zone. So if you guys don't already follow playpickleball.com on YouTube, we release a new video every Wednesday. We have some great videos on there about dinking and the difference between the pressurized zone and the dead zone. And so the pressurized zone is kind of that zone right, you know, near the kitchen line, about a foot, you know, on each side of the kitchen line. If you land your dinks there, your opponents are like, I have to take the ball out of the air, or I have to step back and let it bounce. It kind of creates that indecision. So I try to land those middle dinks in the pressurized zone, but you do have to be careful when you dink middle, because if you leave the ball up, often in the middle, it will get, you know, punished more than if you leave the ball up on the sides. So I still dink low to the net, and I kind of try to hit that pressurized zone. If I'm playing the left, I'm dinking to maybe the inside foot of the player right in front of me. It just causes confusion, and honestly, it takes away their options. You know, if they want to speed the ball up, they're probably going to have to speed the ball up right back to the middle at my forehand. So as you start to play better players, you kind of take away angles from them. And if you pound the middle, especially dinking the ball at the net, you're just going to win way more points. I know you and I played against a pretty good team a couple nights ago at rec play. And we just pounded the middle with our dinks. And anytime they wanted to speed the ball up at you, it would have to be kind of cross court, and it was right into your backhand. And that's
I love my backhand.
That's your sweet spot. That's Danae's signature shot, that two-way backhand.
Don't tell all of them. I might play him in a tournament.
That's true. That's one of her shots.
Don't go there.
But yeah, that's what I would say. I'd say dinking middle is a great way to get people out of their strategy and out of their rhythm. What would you say?
I'm a big lobber.
Yeah, you have a good lob.
If I'm playing a team that's really good at the net, honestly, I throw in a volley lob or a lob that looks like I'm about to dink it. And honestly, it's such a good shot, you guys. It's so underrated. If you don't know how to lob, literally go practice your lob, get really confident in it. And I think it's a fantastic shot. I was laughing at one of the comments on this post. This person said, I will hit a minimum of 28 lobs. And I like cracked up because I was like, oh my gosh, that's so funny. But all jokes aside, it's a great strategy because you're pushing the team off the area that they're playing the best in. And then they're having to work their way all the way back up. Yeah. And so I think that's a great shot to use and utilize. Obviously, you have to be smart about when you can't just like lob every single shot. But if you can get really comfortable with it, like it can be really frustrating for a team.
Since your lob is so good, what would you say is kind of some of the most important things to look for when you're hitting a lob? Like, what do you look for?
You gotta make sure you're in a good position. Like, I think of the lob similar to, I would think, an initiating an attack. The ball has to be in front of you. It should be a dead ball. It doesn't have a lot of spin on it. And you have to be there early. If you're not there early, you're not going to hit a good lob. So I would look for all the same things that you would look to attack a ball off the bounce, and I would do it with a lob. So I think body positioning is probably the most important thing.
Do you employ like topspin on your lob? Do you kind of just push it?
I think it's smart to do a topspin lob because then that lob, you can really hit it up further and then it dips faster.
Gets down quicker.
So I think that is what keeps a lot of lobs in, is if you add a good amount of topspin.
Do you like to lob like right in front of you or cross court, or where do you like to aim?
Cross court's really smart typically because if
you
I'm playing
more
the
real
right
state to
if,
work with
too. If I'm playing the right side, typically that's over. If I'm playing a mixed team, that girl, and so that pushes that guy to go back and get it,
and they kind of have to like switch maybe.
Yeah, and they have to switch. Then again, obviously I do lob the person in front of me too. It really just depends, but I like going into the middle because you just have a little bit more real estate.
Yeah, that's good. I think the only other thing besides, you know, obviously dinking to the middle, lobbing, I think the only other thing would maybe be, you know, just to change it up, right? Like if something you're doing is not working, you know, that's why it's important to, you know, kind of talk with your partner, have somewhat of a game plan going in, and potentially there's a weak spot on the court that you haven't found yet. And sometimes that's not just with your location dinking, but sometimes that's with the pace at which you play. You know, I know that sometimes we play against teams and we feel like a strength of ours maybe is that we could get into longer extended dink rallies. But sometimes if teams love to initiate and speed the ball up, you know, it kind of, you're just reacting to them. And sometimes I know you and I, we like need to initiate more because you have a great speed up off the bounce. So sometimes it's like, wow, we're losing all these points because we're playing slow. Let's increase the pace, or vice versa. We need to slow the ball down. I know you often say, we should get him dinking. Let's just get him dinking, you know? So I think that those are all big things.
And there's a couple comments. I'm going to read some of them. This person says, change up your serves. I think it's genius. Like, just anything to break momentum, break rhythm is so smart. If you start serving really hard, it makes their basically third that they're going to get. Oh, wait, no, that's opposite.
Yeah, yeah, it makes their return. It will make your third easier.
Makes your third easier, but keeps them back. This person, this made me laugh. Call foot faults often.
There you go.
I was laughing at
that. I played in a little money ball and I actually called one during the game.
Really?
Like, I mean, this guy clearly like stepped into the kitchen and I like happened to glance down because I was like, I think that was, and the thing is I wasn't watching his foot as he hit, but like after he hit,
he's like, all
I like
there.
Looked down and his foot was still like moving back off the line. And I was like, I called him and he was very nice about it, but it's always kind of hard to call foot faults, but that's funny.
Aggressive force shots. I think that's genius. Obviously trying to keep them back if they're really great at kitchen play, then really making that transition zone hard for them is smart. So those are a couple other little comments I wanted to add in there that I thought were funny or good.
Yeah, it's good. But guys, let us know in the comments, what do you do if you're playing against somebody who's really good at the kitchen line? How do you, or, you know, going back to this forum post, how do you break someone's rhythm? You know, kind of put a wrinkle in their game plan or their strategy. What do you do when you, when you're, what you're doing clearly isn't working? What's the way that you change it up? Let us know. We love reading the comments, guys. We really do go back and look at them. And as always, if you guys have any questions you want us to answer on a future podcast, go ahead and drop them down in the pot, or go ahead and drop them down in the comment section, and we'll try to make sure we answer those. Do you have any other things, or you want to go on to the next one here?
I think go on to the next.
All right, let's go on to the next one. Hey guys, real quick, we do want to briefly mention Selkirk backpacks. We really love the backpacks that Selkirk has put out. They're really functional, really versatile. They look really sharp. We use them when we play and we use them when we travel.
Actually, last time we were in the airport, we packed our Selkirk backpacks for basically our luggage. And the person behind us was like, whoa, like those are such cool backpacks. Like it's awesome.
They're like, where'd you get them?
Yeah, it's just, they're super functional. They have a bunch of different sizes. I take stuff for work and mine and bring it to a coffee shop. I mean, they're awesome.
Yeah guys, so if you're in the market for a backpack, there's all different sizes, all different colors, head on over to selkirk.com and get yours today. This one here, we're gonna go through kind of two forum posts that we found. With some kind of crazy wreck pickleball encounters, some crazy kind of wreck pickleball scenarios here. So starting with the first one, this one was actually pretty entertaining. I'm just going to read it and then kind of get your thoughts on this. But this guy says, I was traveling last week and playing some wreck pickleball and had an unusual encounter. Some dude whom I've never met wound up playing against me. He jumped paddles in the rack to get in. Apparently, his partner was his friend. Every time someone on our side called the score, he would yell gibberish like he was mocking us while he called the score. He would also jump up and down when he wasn't receiving and wave his paddle around yelling. Odd. On volleys, before we would hit, he would scream and yell at the top of his lungs. I've never seen such buffoonery. Love that word, buffoonery. I'm going to try to use that in a sentence this week. Hilarious in a way, but come on, man. One of my serves he did his wave and shout thing, and he was making eye contact with someone on the sideline, smiling at them, assuming he was being entertaining. So I drilled my serve right into his neck. Oops. I was aiming at his chest, to be honest, but then I shouted, fun, let's do it again. He spent the rest of the match trying to body bag me no matter where I was standing, all out. After we won, I love how people like to put their little humble brags in here. After we won, he told me he knew I was going to Nelson him, and he let me do it so he wouldn't feel bad about trying to hit me. Basically, he said he wanted me to do something to allow him to smash every shot as hard as he could. I actually laughed and told him I couldn't tell he was trying to hit me. He went away, but wow, what an a-hole. I've never seen such antics before. What do you think about this encounter?
Dude, wreck, I always say this. Rec play is a jungle. Like, I'm not surprised. Like, this isn't very common, but this is definitely common enough to be like, I can hear the story and be like, oh yeah, I could totally see that.
This has never happened to me before. Like, imagine playing somebody and every time he doesn't even know this guy. Imagine playing against someone you don't know. But every time before you hit, they yell at the top of their lungs and jump.
There are weirdos out there.
Like, obviously, this would be like a distraction or a hindrance, whatever, distraction in like a ref. You can't do that in like a tournament play.
No.
But like, I don't know what I would do.
I mean, I would probably just try to finish the game as fast as possible and never play with that person again.
Yeah.
Because that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
I'd be not having fun on that court.
Yeah, some. I mean, the comments were like were pretty hilarious on this on this post. People,
LOL at the fact that he body bagged him, or sorry, Nasty Nelson to him.
There was just clear animosity between these strangers.
Literally on the strangers
on the pickleball court. But let us know, guys, in the comments. Have you experienced something like this? Have you experienced such buffoonery? Because this guy loved to use the word buffoonery. Have you ever used that word before?
No, I have not.
All right, guys, let's go to the next one. This one has actually happened to me, okay? So I think it's happened to you too, but let's go with this one. True story happened today. Playing rec, our opponent went wide to get a shot. He got it over the net and ran into the fence, but his foot was stuck in the fence and he could not dislodge it. What's the ruling here? I'm pretty sure the rule book doesn't have a provision for getting stuck in the fence. Thoughts? So this has happened to you before.
Oh yeah, this has totally happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to a lot of people, actually.
I've seen it happen to a pro in a match before too.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so the official ruling is there's no ruling. Like, it's not a hindrance. It's not a anything like that. There's no technical rule that says you have to redo it. Or
so like in a tournament, it's kind of like you're out of luck.
You really
like
are.
In rec play, maybe.
In rec play, you know, maybe you guys can read the point or whatever. I'm sure people would be very understanding. But yeah, if you're talking official pickleball rulings rule book, there is no do-over if your foot gets stuck in a fence or something like that.
Do you remember what happened when it happened to you? Like, did you?
Yeah, I was hitting a third. And I got pushed back really far. It was at a rec court. There wasn't a ton of room behind the pickleball court. And my shoe got stuck on the fence. And I literally got stuck. And we ended up losing the point. I can't remember if I was playing with you or not. And
I think I remember that.
We just kept playing. I think we just lost the point.
I think the same thing when it happened to me when my foot kind of got caught was, I think I was actually going back to retrieve a lob, but it was on the baseline, not like on the sidelines, you know, like the fence wasn't too far behind me. But yeah, I think same thing. We just lost the point.
We just lost the point. It stinks, but it's like, I don't know, not much you can do at that point. I've seen in professional matches, I don't know if I've seen that or I saw Catherine Parento like literally lose a shoe on court.
Yeah.
And they kept playing the point. They don't get to redo it, you know? So
do you think, okay, this brings up an interesting question. Do you think that the majority of courts that you play at are like, do you think that there needs to be like significantly more room at the baseline?
I think I would always say that, but like, is that really economical when it comes to real estate? Like a lot of these pickleball courts are put on tennis courts that already have set out.
Yeah, I think there are some that are just like ridiculous. Like I think that there are some that are okay, but there are a couple places I've played where it legitimately affects the game.
Yeah,
because
1,000%.
If someone has a deep serve,
you can't ATP, you can't serve, you can't. I mean, there's tons of courts I've been to that are like not set up well at all.
Yeah, I'd say like if you guys are ever going to build a pickleball court, just keep that in mind. Give yourself some margin on the sides. In the baseline, you really do want more space than you maybe think.
Right.
But obviously a pickleball court with little space is better than no pickleball court at all. So
it's true. Should we go on to the next one?
Yeah, we should go to the next one. But guys, do let us know in the comments if you've ever gotten stuck in the fence. I'm curious. Let us know.
All right. Next one. This person says, this is titled, "Rec play is not only just for fun." They go on to say, "I see this a lot. People saying this about rec play. Who cares? It's just rec play. It's just fun. These people are oblivious. Rec play can be just every bit as serious and competitive as a tournament. It just depends on the group that you're playing with. If you're out there just bumping the ball around during rec play and you don't really care who wins, don't assume for a second that's how everyone plays rec pickleball. A lot of people don't like tournaments because of the sandbagging or the cost or whatever. So they really only play rec play and they have a blast playing super competitive rec pickleball." This had also a ton of comments with a lot of different views. So I want to ask you personally, Barrett, do you think rec pickleball is just for fun?
Not for me.
Okay, tell me about that.
I don't know. I guess you have to define like how you classify rec pickleball, because I don't know, for me, like I think this, I'm just competitive, you know? Mm-hmm. So like when you say, is it just for fun? Are you separating like fun and competitive? Like I think for me, fun is competitive. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, what do you think?
I mean, for me, I think I love being competitive and I do like to play tournaments. And I remember like we used to play some rec players and I would get so mad at you if we played a worse team and you would just be like giving them free points basically. And I'd be like, dude.
Like pity points?
Yeah. I'd be so mad at you because I'm like, I don't want to play dumb.
I know, I've stupid. I've learned that about you. So we played a game like probably a week and a half ago where we played against like a very low level team and you kept looking at me like, let's finish it. Like you kept like, beat them 11-0, but you were like,
I know. I was like, I'm not going to play easy on them because people are going to be mad at me for doing that. That's fine. You can be mad at me. You don't need to play me in rec play. But if I'm going to go play rec play, to me, that's practicing my game. So I do play tournaments. I like to play tournaments. I like to be competitive. When I go out to rec play, to me, that's practice. So that's my time that I get to work on shots in a game scenario. And that's very fun for me. And I'm not a jerk. Like I'm really nice to everybody on court. Even after that game, I was like telling them like, hey, like you have great fundamentals and blah, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I'm not going to go out there and just like, da, 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 like as this person says, bump around the ball and just like try to keep the game close. It's not fun for me. So I do think everyone's different. I do think there are people that just want to go out there and bump around the ball, have some fun, have some laughs. That's totally fine. That's just not how I'm going to go play rec play.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, I've definitely learned that about you. You know, I think for me, whenever we're playing against a team that's not as good, it's less of me wanting to give them points and more, it's just like hard for me to engage. It's hard for me to like get into it because I'm like, this is like, I think honestly there's times when I feel like I actually would play better against better people because I'm locked in, but I guess the idea is that you should be able to lock in against anybody. But yeah, I don't know, I think I'm with you. Like I think the difference is like this person maybe said, we do like to play tournaments. Like I haven't played a ton of tournaments this year, but like I would like to play more. Like they're fun and we do compete. You know, we stick in the 4-5, 5-0 level, you know, we really do like competitive pickleball. And it's the same thing of like, I don't know. It is less fun to me to play a team that's not as good. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's like an important perspective for people to hear, because there are a lot of people out there that get mad at higher level players for not wanting to play with them. And it's not a jab at who they are. You know, it's not a, like, I don't like you as a person. It's just not as fun to play someone where you're not able to have longer rallies and hit more shots. And, you know, when you play against higher level people, you get away with less, mm-hmm. You know, that's my issue. When you can play a lower level player and you can hit a shot that's actually not that good of a shot, but it feels like a really good shot when you're playing against them because they're not punishing the balls that are kind of in that yellow zone, you know? So.
And I always think at the end of the day, I've said this before, you cannot choose how people play you. And so there are times where I'm playing really serious, at least for me, like I'm playing to win and I'll play people that I'm like, okay, I can tell they're like not trying.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit there and be like, da, 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 like you, da, da, da. Like I'm not going to tell you how to play me. Yeah. All I'm going to do is play how I play. And I think that should be a respect thing across the board. Like if someone is just out there to have fun, I'm not going to say you have to play competitive. You have to like, da, da, da. Yeah. Like, no, it's your choice. You can play however you want, but don't be mad at me for playing how I want, you know?
Yeah. And I think that also something that does kind of affect this is how your local court is set up. Like,
yeah, we play on the high level side. So we're like, not
But like there are certain people that play at courts where there's, you know, 12 plus courts. They're not all full and they don't have like we play in a unique environment, which some people probably also play in an environment like this. But we play a lot of times in an environment. There's six courts, three courts are advanced courts, three courts are beginner courts. So really, there's only three courts for your side and there's paddle racks on each side. And it's kind of like a rotation system, but on the advanced side, it's winner stays.
Yeah. So all challenge courts basically.
And then on the beginner side, it's, you know, four on, four off. And so there's just a less, there's not as much of a competitive edge over on that side. And so I think that does affect, you know, this scenario as well, because like, I know, for example, because within our challenge courts, there's one challenge court. You know, like there's one like head
court. It's like one king of the court, I would call it.
Yeah, one where people are kind of try to challenge the challenge, you know. So I think within that, like I remember talking to someone from our side, or sounds so political. I remember talking from someone on the advanced side, and you know, some people from the beginner side came over to try to play, and you know, we beat them, or no, he, I was watching him play. He beat them like 11-0. And I was talking to him afterwards and he was like, yeah, you know, we have to do that. We have to beat people 11-0 because that's going to make them stop coming over to our side.
And you guys have to remember, we're talking like a 45 to an hour wait sometimes on our side. Like yeah. It's a lot. Like if you're
so
not
when people
playing...
come over, it does, it lengthens the line.
Yeah.
It's not as competitive. And he's basically saying like, if I were to let up and not play as hard, they're going to think they can hang over here. Mm-hmm. And that's going to increase, you know, so
our wait time and take away the level of game
play. And so there is something to playing hard, playing, you know, really dialing it in against lower level players, because it also lets the other players know, oh, we're not at this level yet. And sometimes that's how you test. Like if a lower level player came and played against you and they knew you're a 5-0, then and they score 7 points against you, then it's like they think, ooh, maybe I'm a 4-0. You know, maybe I'm a 4, you know, maybe I'm better. But if you beat them 11-1 or 11-2, then it kind of like gives them the proper perspective of how to rate themselves. And I think people need that, because I don't know that our rating systems are to the point where they're perfect or reliable. And the only way that they are reliable is if you're logging consistently, you know, sanctioned tournament matches. So I think some of that self-rating comes by playing better players. And how are you really going to rate yourself if those better players aren't playing good?
Yeah, right.
So yeah, so, yeah. We kind of got a little off of the topic, but at the same time, I think it makes sense. Yeah. Like it's not like rec play. People have different goals in rec play. I think it may be different if you or I were taking somebody out, like teaching them to play pickleball, like some of our friends.
Yeah, that's different.
But like when you're showing
when you talk to rec play, that's what we're talking about. Open play.
Open play where you don't necessarily know the people you're playing against, or, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's a time and a place where you wouldn't. You know, if we're playing against my mom and dad or something who've played three times.
Yeah.
You play three
we're
times
just like a, teaching them
three
while
times play. A year. Yeah. You're going to keep the ball in play. You're not going to try to dominate them. You probably might try to dominate, you know, some of the balls, but
maybe some.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we'd love to hear like, what do you guys think? Again, I think everybody has their own opinion when it comes to this. Do you go to rec play for fun? Do you go to practice? Are you competitive? Super interested in what you would say to that. I think that's all we have, isn't it?
Yeah, guys, please be sure, like we always say, please be sure to give us a like and follow, subscribe, however you're consuming this podcast. It really does help it grow. We want to continue to grow this so we can make it bigger and better. We're going to start bringing on guests and really start growing this thing, but we need you to spread the word and leave us a like, leave us a comment, share this with a friend if you enjoy this content. And
make sure to rate this. If you're watching this on Spotify or any other streaming platform besides YouTube, go and rate it. Give it 5 stars, shameless plug. And that's going to really help us.
Yeah, guys. But thanks so much for hanging out with us on today's episode of the Pickleball Connection. We'll see you on the next one.